are listening to Off Planet Radio at offplanetradio.com.
Well, good evening and welcome to Off Planet TV. I'm Randy Moggins on the Conscious Consumer Network, broadcasting live out in the Netherlands at consciousconsumernetwork.tv. And then you can find these shows later on the YouTube channel and at offplanetradio.com. We are in interesting times indeed. And, I got to say something about the show last week with Jim Conda Jr., because some people got the sense that maybe I was actually supporting Donald Trump. I'm not supporting Donald Trump. I'm not supporting anybody. There's nobody running for president, by the way. All of these guys are just actors. But the point of that show last week, and that we got a lot of good comments on the show, was that we broke out some constructive thoughts about the electoral process, about the dark side of America, and how everything in this country, and frankly, even globally, has been hijacked, and what we can begin to do about it. And tonight's show will, in some ways, probably dogleg into that. Oops, bad term, dogleg. Nope, don't want to do that. Anyway, we're gonna go sort of into the light side and dark side as well tonight. Part of what I've been talking about for nearly a decade is the thinning of the veil. The boundaries between dimensions and worlds and the concepts of reality that we all thought we understood so well. And as this wake-up call rolls out, as people's consciousness kind of gets spurred, there's an awareness, and the awarenesses of both darkness and light. The contrast of a world that we live in is one of the potential for a technological miracle on the planet. Mankind has evolved technologically, while at the same time we have digressed spiritually and morally on this planet. And as a result of that, the battles that we face now are in the spiritual realms. And they have to do with everything around us, our technology, our medicine, our media, our entertainment system. Everything around us has been hijacked by this cabal. And the cabal is powered by something very dark. It has been here for tens of thousands of years, and part of our job now in waking up and becoming light workers is to lay this beast down and take this planet back for good and light. With me tonight is my guest, Terry Joyce, and as you're going to find out over the next hour, she is qualified to speak on a number of issues that are germane to all of this. Terry had her own wake-up experience several years ago, staring down the gun barrel of a federal government raid at a California marijuana dispensary. And it was at that point she began to assess her world, her priorities, and her view of things. And she's here tonight to share a lot of that. And along the way, we're going to laugh, we're going to smile, we're going to share the weirdness of this wake-up thing. Welcome to Off Planet TV, Terry Joyce.
Oh, thank you for having me here, Randy, and it's a pleasure to be on your show and actually to see you face to face.
Yeah.
What a difference, you know, when you see people like, oh my God.
Yeah, well, it can be scary, but we'll deal with that. How you doing, girl?
No,
how
you doing? You're okay. I'm doing well. I'm doing well. You know, life has been a bit interesting lately, and yeah. You talk about the light and the dark and waking up and everything. It's definitely shown a lot of things that if you were to tell it to most people, you know, a lot of the people that are in my life that I've known for many years, they would say, what? Have you lost it? I mean, we knew you were a little weird, but, you know, how far does this go? It's like, if anything, if people don't want to believe it, at least it makes a great story. And I might be able to write it and sell it to the very industry that's screwing us over in the first place.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly. Let's rewind a little bit.
Okay.
Tell people a little bit about who Terry Joyce is, what you're about, your background, because you've actually been pursuing entertainment as a lifelong goal. You've been very active. You trained in acting. You've trained in doing comedy. Tell us where you've been.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, I've always been, had a dream of being an actress and working in Hollywood and everything like that. And so I started out as a kid. I mean, I started doing plays, and I was my first job was a dinner theater in Fresno, California. I was a theater arts major in college, and in 1984, so Orwellian. I know, it was like 1984, the big year. I moved down to Pasadena, California to study dramatic arts. At which point, a woman that I met just on the street who happened to want to take, you know, life is a cosmic weird meeting of people. But I met this actress who actually was, if you watch the movie 9 to 5, she's the drunk woman in it. Nice. That gets reformed in the end. Well, that lady actually took me to the improvisation in Hollywood on Melrose. And it was at a time in comedy where, you know, I saw Jay Leno there, but I didn't know, he wasn't really a household name yet. It's like, I kind of recognize that guy, and he's sitting in front of this building. So I got to look at, Richard Lewis, Marsha Warfield, Byron Allen, Stephen Wright, Jerry Seinfeld. I mean, all these guys were at Charles Fletcher. They were all at the improv during this particular time where there was this huge comedy boom that was happening in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And I had a comedic background, and eventually about a year or two later tried stand-up, and then that's what actually really happened to me. So I became a stand-up comedian. And I traveled all over the United States, and I worked in radio, in mainstream radio, comedy or whatever, being interviewed at a comedy club. And I also have worked in reality television. I was on the first season of Last Comic Standing, which branded the series and everything, and got to peer into the world. And this is an NBC show. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I got to peer into the world of reality television, which now in retrospect, I realize is just basically social engineering our society to the worst possible degree in the first place. So I did that. I worked in Hollywood. I've known several people in the entertainment industry. I've been behind the veil. I've gone to the parties, although I never saw the darker aspect of the entertainment business, which now I've had the opportunity to do that. So I came out to be, I placed number 9. I was at 9, actually, if I'm interesting.
Number 9?
I was number 9. I lost at number 9, but I did 6 episodes out of the 9 that were made. And then I came back for a second season, which was first season to get second season. So I got a lot of airplay. I mean, there was a time where, I would be at the airport and someone would yell at my name, you know, and so, or a car would stop on the road and go, hey, are you that girl in that show? And I go, yeah, it's me, you know, and then I move on. I mean, there was that brush of having that kind of, recognition factor for a while, which in a sense I think now has maybe gotten me in trouble because being in that world and also being part of their objective, which is a lot of controlling our society and how we think, etc. When your creativity is used to be part of the machine, and then you step out of the machine and you go to the internet and you go, oh, but wait a second. I want to talk about now what's really going on in the world. And what did happen to me, which was the transition, was that I did get in a raid at a medical marijuana dispensary. I was doing a show about cannabis, but I didn't really want it to be a show about cannabis, but it was a comedy show and I didn't really understand what was going on. But as I was doing it, I learned a lot about it. And yeah, I was in this raid. At which point I had kind of a spiritual awakening where somewhere in my soul I said, how did it get this bad? Something's not right here. And the one thing that really woke me up was the fact that I had voted for medical marijuana. I was literally in a doctor's office, which was in the same building as the medical marijuana dispensary. And yet I'm being held by gunpoint and I'm innocent. I wasn't even a patient yet. I was just somebody who was in a doctor's office to maybe get a recommendation. And having that happen, because of the fact that I was on an NBC show and I was already kind of playing around with the papers and another controversy about marijuana, the Pasadena Weekly, which is my hometown, was to do an article on me on that day. And they said, get here immediately. And I ended up on the cover of my own paper, hometown paper, with the American flag behind me and the words "Bongos of Justice" and how a DEA raid turned into a missionary for medical marijuana. So all of a sudden, like, I stepped into, like, I felt almost pushed into like a public arena about something that I was learning about. Then I had another spiritual awakening, and again, yes, pot brownies were involved. And I saw the plant. First of all, it's like my head popped off, and I heard like my masters or so, you know, other things going on, and I was like, okay, what's happening now? And then I was shown that none of it was really an accident. It was kind of like, this is it. This is what I incarnated for something like this. You know, it's like you came here to work. You didn't come here to be a star. You know,
I'm a spectator sport.
Like, there's something way bigger than Hollywood happening here. Yeah. And I saw that the cannabis plant was an answer to a lot of the problems that we have. Like, for the survival of us and the planet itself. And this is a very big issue. And so I started there. And then when you start to peel that onion and you see where it's all connected to, like, who made the plant illegal? Oh, the Rockefellers, the DuPonts, the J.P. Morgans, et cetera, et cetera. And then you see the pharmaceutical company thing. Then I got involved with the Occupy movement and saw how, you know, the media was trying to stop, had another storyline of what was going on and the real truth wasn't getting out. So I worked in the media department, got myself on an FBI list, et cetera, et cetera. Now I started working. Then I started doing radio, internet radio about cannabis plant, and then I hopped over to the Truth Media. Make a long story short, now that that's been happening, Hollywood has now started to knock on my door again, and try to control what I'm doing. And this has happened with people that I've known. This has happened with people that have been a lover to me before and a mentor, a kind of trying to keep tabs on me, who also, revealed a few truths to me. And I'm questioning whether or not there were people that were actually handlers in my life all the time. And also I did go to what I call the Hollywood Lizard Party, where I was, I feel like I was like, they were going to do something to me. So that's a whole nother thing there.
Yeah, and what we want to do
the
is
whole reptilian thing has come to present. All of it is there.
Yeah. We want to unpack that. We want to unpack that one big time.
Yeah.
In the course of all this, you obviously got an inside look at a number of different worlds at once, the entertainment industry, and then specifically the world of stand-up comedy, which, as I understand it, is fiercely competitive and, let's just say, loaded with a lot of backstage and behind-the-scenes drama. You want to share anything about that world?
Well, you know, here's the thing about stand-up comics. If you are good at it, there is something that does happen to people who are true comics at heart, and I think that there are a lot of us that really appreciate the art form, and also what comedy can do in terms of consciousness in people, and also giving information to people. Some of my favorite comics were Lenny Bruce, and I have great respect for George Carlin, and also Bill Hicks. They are comics that I wish to, like, a lot of times I go, I just want to do my Bill Hicks set, where you're actually really saying something that, that has some real truth in it. It's one of the last bastions of us being able to say what we want to say and do it in a way that causes laughter. It can be competitive. It was more competitive on the reality show, which again, when you work on a reality show, basically what they do is they set up situations for you to have to exist in to get to the goal to a prize that's over here. And so it's really set up to make people treat each other like crap. And then dominate each other, and then they edit that and call it reality television, you know, which is a big lie.
The aspect of all of these so-called reality shows, survival shows, the shows where they have eliminations is basically, it's really very predatory in a sense, because I suspect that they pick people based on very complex algorithms of personality types.
Yes.
Casting into certain stereotypes, and also casting into the fact that in the scheme of things, there's going to be, let's just say, those who are less capable than others. And the drama is then to pit the strong against the weak, and on a weekly basis, spin the wheel to see who's going to get tossed out this time, which in a lot of ways is so much the picture of our American culture of competitiveness. But in a bigger sense, it's what Hollywood's really like as well. I mean, you've been out there, you've lived your life out there. I've had encounters with people. I know people who have been in the theatrical business, people who have been in film, the music industry, and the competition is brutal. You need to have, let's just say, a very strong ego and probably even almost a reckless sense of abandon to enter the entertainment industry.
Well, you have to have a thick skin, and you have to, you also have to be able to be willing to like be rejected for ridiculous reasons, and really, in a sense, when you look at it, and this is what I told my friends, like, well, what do you care if you're rejected from these people? They're so corrupt, it's not even funny. And the fact that you got rejected for anything has nothing to do with you as a talent. It has to do with the agenda of what they're trying to sell the American people. And so, you know, once you realize that, you do see the wizard behind the curtain once you've been there. Now, I'm not sure if every entertainer got that. I mean, even when I was on the reality show, I knew that we were being specifically selected. It wasn't necessarily about how funny you were in your set or whether how many people really liked you. They want to have a certain amount of viewership, and each comedian represented a certain demographic of society or stereotype of what a comedian would be, because they don't really have a whole lot of originality, I don't think, in some ways. I mean, it's very, very programmed, and so for very specific reasons. But by and large, I find that most comedians actually have been supportive of me. I've been helped by many, many people and encouraged by them. And also, comics are always willing to, give you a joke or help you, you know, with a tagline or however. Now, there are certain people that try to, especially if you're headlining and they're featuring, and they try to do what they can to sabotage you so you won't have as a good set following them. And there's all that kind of backbiting. And there is some of that does exist, but really, by and large, with the comedy community. And also, I'm a woman, so it's a little bit different, and it's a little bit harder because you have to really be funny, in some ways, to gain their respect. But once you do, you know, I've been mentored and brought into a lot of different things by them. So yeah.
You know, the other side of it is, Terry, that this is probably a stereotype you can explode, but I've always had the sense that there's a certain level of neurosis and depression that goes into stand-up comedy as well. And I think that goes back, largely Woody Allen played off of that heavily. But you even see it in the backgrounds of certain comedic actors who seem to be, George Carlin's another one where we'd look at him and we'd see the comedy and yet the tragedy as well. John Belushi, another wonderful comedic actor. But I get the sense that you kind of feed off of this brain chemistry that can take you to heights of ecstasy one minute and depths of depression the next. Maybe that's a stereotype. I don't know.
Well, I think, you know, stereotypes are based on a certain amount of reality is my thought. I wouldn't say that everybody always falls into the extreme of that category, or maybe doesn't necessarily fit in that way. I do think that there probably are some commonalities with comedians. One is, you know, we do have a trouble, following or fitting in some ways. And there may be like a sense of, there could have been something that happened in their lives where their mind flipped into making things funny in order to deal with certain things, the pain of certain things. You know, it's like a switch that sometimes you flip or something. You know, there's definitely something about comedy too, that it's kind of like music. So you kind of hear the rhythm. There's a certain way to say things, a certain delivery that you have. And, you know, and also you can exaggerate your own personality in ways that would be more comedic. That's not necessarily how you are all the time. You know, things like this. I mean, it is a performance in many ways. And I think also a lot of comedians come, like, let's say George Carlin or someone like Bill Hicks, we tend to be idealists. And so, you know, there's this thing about seeing the world in a certain way, and then it's not that way. And so it's the in-between that creates the humor in what you're observing. So there's, most comedians are very observational. There is something about being able to assess a room and to feel the energies of the people in the room, and then realize what to do to get their focus and what challenges you have. Because, you know, I mean, there, for me, or even for most people, but especially someone like a woman or something, I mean, I'm a little bit off the beaten path of some things, so I've been told. And so, you know, if I go outside and I see like a bunch of like really straight laced people, you know, wearing, you know, sweaters and all conservative, you know, San Marino Valley, you know, and I come up and I go, nah, 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 they're like, oh, we don't know what to make of this. And so you have to acquiesce your life to their life by keying into what's going to make you relatable to them. And that takes practice. Because I have had that, you know, I have had those shows where you're just like, that was, I know tomorrow will be better, but that's part of being a comedian. And that's part of the excitement, because you're not really sure what's going to happen. So instead of like, I'm too afraid to jump out of a plane and high dive, but, you know, I'm willing to have public humiliation as a possibility at the risk of, but, you know, when you do make people laugh, it is a great feeling, and it's like riding a wave. You know, when you're connecting and it's all working and you're in that groove, there's nothing like it. There's nothing like it. There's no other feeling like it. That's all I got to say on that. It's fun. It's definitely fun.
In a lot of ways, you're like, you're going on stage. You have obviously some part of your routine, or maybe all of it, kind of worked out, but you're pulling out of the room and out of your own consciousness at that particular time, spins and nuances, and even throwing things in. The best do this. They're like good DJs. They know when to throw in that track that's going to light the room up. And I've seen it with stand-up comedians numerous times, where you can tell they've read the room. You can tell they got the vibe. And then they'll work the audience. And it's like any audience, on a good night, you're going to hit the high note and you're going to ride right over top with them. And on a bad night, it's going to be like rim shots. Boom. You know, just.
Or, you know, it's kind of like, well, they're quiet, or, you know, it's like pulling teeth. You know, it's a lot. It's not as easy. I mean, there's some nights where they're right there and they're right in sync with you. And then you just go. And then there's technical things that happen. You know, sometimes, you know, the waitress drops, you know, a bunch of drinks, and then it's invariably at the time where, because, you know, if you are doing a setup and you're getting to the punchline, if they hit it like right when you're about to do the midway to the punchline, it's like you can't really recover the joke on
right.
that.
Yeah.
So you can, like, make a joke about that, and you have to be able to flip, you know, and when you're first starting out, all those things, you know, can throw you off, you know, make you want to cry in the back room, in the green room when you're done. I remember, like, I was in Indianapolis, I would be crying, and they go, there's no crying in comedy, you know. I have a lot of respect for it. I mean, I feel that I've evolved in my attitude towards it, and now I look at it, you know, if I'm doing a radio show or however, and I want to I work on interjecting humor, I hope some people find it funny here and there, but you know, it's more, to me, it's a powerful communication skill to be able to bring new ideas and humor and healing and laughter and things like that. So I kind of look at it differently than I need to get my own sitcom and work on in Illuminati television.
Yeah. But at the same time, isn't it interesting? I don't careful there.
I'm trying to cover them. You know, I realize I have a cup with a Starbucks.
It was a nice recovery.
I know how horrible that is. As long as you don't see the nose spray
on the camera, you're good.
It's like I'm drinking out of a satanic cup, and I'm realizing that while I'm on the air. I'm like, oh my God, there's the fish god.
It's okay, you know? Really. We're casual here. Okay. We're very casual. We smoke, we drink stuff, we pass gas.
Yeah, but
we
do Starbucks. That's the ultimate Starbucks. Evil.
Yeah. Is it really?
I've heard about that it's the fish goddess and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, it's just all that.
Christmas cups were inappropriate.
Red, yeah. You know, really, it's just a vanity. I mean, Starbucks is a vanity. It's a $5 cup of coffee with a shot for another $6.50. And, you know,
I always get the regular drip. I'm cheap. They're like, here comes the cheap girl.
Yeah. Well, it's not only that, but it's annoying standing there watching people order their coffee. And it's like, well, I want a latte and I want it skinny and put a twist on top of it. And I want some sprinkles and oh, give me a shot and then ice it. And you're going, can't you just fucking order a cup of coffee and be done with it?
Right.
I want to strangle these people.
Yeah. And that's their whole world and they have to have it that way. You know, it's.
I know that really, you know what it is? Starbucks to me epitomizes this whole me culture. It's like for that 3.5-4 minutes that you're standing there scratching your ass, ordering a cup of coffee, somebody cares about what you want. You're special.
You can't get a Four Agreements CD and have a spiritual CD while you go there. No. Well, I mean, I'm not saying that it is or isn't. I think the Four Agreements is spiritual, but they do have that. They have that quasi, you know, you can order music and it's
it's consumer culture and it's emblematic of kind of where we're at now. We used to go into a diner and get a cup of coffee for 50 cents or a quarter. And it was diner coffee and it was fine. The truck drivers ran on it religiously. And all of a sudden now we have coffee and it's like, what, $5-6.50 for a cup of coffee? And you're going, so what changed? Because frankly, I go to Starbucks. Now, it's not the best coffee in the world.
No,
and I'm slamming Starbucks here. I mean, the first couple times I drank it, and I remember this, drinking it, I'm going, that smells like cat piss to me. And it's kind of offensive, but really coffee to me is something that's almost like spiritual and that doesn't cut it. So now we've slammed Starbucks and great.
But whatever.
Whatever. We can do that. Sure. But it is part of this whole cultural thing that we've been immersed into where everything's so consumerized now.
Well, when you go, I'm just thinking about Starbucks. Speaking of that, maybe they should be talked bad about because there's a placard now when you go over to get your cream, you know, whatever. It says that there's cancer causing properties in the coffee, and you know, and as well as how some of the baked goods are made or something. And I'm like, I have a cancer, thank you for putting it right where my cream is, so I could, after I've already purchased it, that the coffee that I'm gonna drink, I'm at risk of cancer getting. What is that, in a sense?
That's spun off from the medical commercials. You watch the pharmaceutical commercials on TV. This is for you here in the U.S. I don't know what it's like in Europe. Hopefully in Europe you banned these ads or never had them. The pharmaceutical ad is nice, fluffy background music. Nice soft focus shot comes in, and they begin to talk about, well, you know, you've got bladder cancer, you've got erectile dysfunction, you've got pancreatitis, you've got, you know, postnasal drip, whatever it is. And then they zoom into the product, and it's got some exotic made-up name by a Madison Avenue guy. And the rest of the commercial is 45 seconds in very staccato, rapid-fire motion telling you all of the horrible things that are going to happen to you when you take this medicine. And you look at it and you go, really? You're going to buy this? You're going to go ask your doctor.
Right.
Ask your doctor.
If it's okay to have your head explode. But yeah,
this is right for you. And you're going, well, of course it's not right for me. It's going to kill me.
Which is more reason to know about the cannabis plant and other types of herbs. That
good segue. Go
of,
for
of,
it.
Of healing
yeah.
ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's humorous. I don't know how many people I know that have diseases worse than the actual disease that they were treating with the drug in the first place.
I'm one of them.
Really?
Yeah, no, I was left with a stripped intestinal tract as a result of antibiotics that they gave me for an infection. I wound up having to have intravenous antibiotics. I had a very severe life-threatening infection. It required surgery. And the side effect to that was that it stripped my intestinal tract. So my listeners have been so good to me. I hear this all the time. Guys, it's gotten a lot better. I'm working on it. It's just that this is a side effect when you do big pharma medicine. In some cases, the cure actually is worse than what was wrong with you. And, you know, had I known then what I know now, and, you know, we've talked about it in my house, what we've learned about the effects of cannabis, especially related to cancer, we honestly think we could have saved our mothers, both of whom died of cancer. You know, and now we've got the ability, because the formularies have come online and we have these new forms of cannabis that we can take, the oils and being able to ingest cannabis and the new chemistry / alchemy that's going on in the medical marijuana industry, where now we have the ability to really start saving lives, and we're seeing it. We're seeing people who are getting turned around. Talk a little bit about your experience with that.
Well, I've interviewed several people they've gone into remission from using cannabis, and also patients that had COPD and how they've had relief from that. People that have had skin cancers, liver cancer. There's a lot of testimony. Crohn's disease, a young boy with Crohn's disease that now is pretty much in remission, and he did go through hell with pharmaceuticals. And he's only 15, so that kind of makes him sort of interesting because he's so young using it, and a lot of people get excited about that. And so, the testimonies are endless with it. And I've also dabbled into other oils, other essential oils, what they can do, herbs, natural healing, meditation, different Reiki, you know, and just looking into different modalities of healing than what our pharmaceutical companies have done. So yeah, lots of testimony for it.
It's interesting to bring that up because it is a holistic approach. And cannabis doesn't stand out there alone. As you pointed out, the essential oils, something as seemingly, well, not nebulous, but out there is meditation. Mm-hmm. You know, I think people who have never meditated, and I've done it on and off since I was a teenager and in recent years very regularly, don't understand what happens to the body when you begin to work it, when you begin to use your breath, when you begin to modulate your brain waves, when you take yourself into a place that's actually your inner place. It's actually who you really are when you go what I call deep inside. And then using that in concert with more earth-based modalities. You know, the whole aspect of the big pharma industry for me, Terry, has been it removes us from our nature, because they've compounded all of these hideous drugs. You know, just watch any drug commercial, they'll tell you right up front, they're very level about this, that we lost connection with the earth. We lost connection with shamanism and herbalism and all these essential things that got demonized. I don't know if you know this. John D. Rockefeller, who set up the medical schools in the early part of the 20th century, even as he was building allopathic medicine, was being treated by a naturopathic medicine practitioner. Now, that's the height of hypocrisy, but what it tells you is that Rockefeller knew where the real healing was, and what the agenda was to get us on to a medical system that would, first off, shorten our lives, reduce the quality of our lives, and in the process of doing it, make sure that you relieved everybody of most of their cash, because dying in America isn't cheap.
Right. Yeah. I agree with you. That's what I realized through this journey, is that is exactly what has been going on. it's disheartening, really, because when you have people talking about it, coming out and saying this is happening to me, but they're slow in the medical research from their end. I just read recently that they did a whole bunch of things to rats, and I was thinking they gave them THC and they went into REM, they helped with cancer of the colon and everything like this for the rats. And I'm thinking, well, did the rats get dry mouth? Did they get paranoid? Did they eat more pebbles than usual? did they have laughing fits? You know, I mean, it's like, really, do you have to do this to rats? We've already been doing it to people.
You have a sudden unexplained desire to go listen to Inagata DeVita or something.
Right, yeah. It's like, so, you know, that would have their eyes bloodshot.
But, you know, seriously, and maybe not so seriously, on one level, even just the recreational cannabis industry, which I think gets a bad rap, mainly that's kind of left over from the 60s. And then, of course, this classic 70s stoner era that I came out of. Mm-hmm. But what's not to like about something that's harmless to you biologically, relatively speaking? I mean, if you're smoking it, yes, you have a minor risk there with your lungs, but something that for a few hours relaxes you, gives you a healthy appetite, gives you an outlook. For many people, it's a creative impulse. I mean, when I was growing up, that was when I liked to play music. There was nothing better than zipping up a joint and then pulling the guitars out and writing and things like that. You know, these are creative aspects that get unlocked because we detach for a while from our rational left brain functions. We go right brain, we go cerebral, and we kind of discover another side of ourselves that's trained out of us. The whole thing about this is that this was all about performance in society. It was about decoupling us from the right brain creative impulses to mainstream us into a left brain culture that made us productive for the man's world. And as a result of that, that's how we wind up with this mechanistic culture, this militant culture, and a culture that loves to denigrate the creative light side of us.
Yes, I agree. I agree with you on that. And cannabis can, and it does open up the creative aspect. I've used it that for those reasons sometimes. I've even gone into, I'm probably unethical, but I've gone into a dispensary and I said, I need to do some writing. We'll help with that. And I also feel that I've had more of a, it's helped me with my spirituality. It's helped me with my own awakening too. And I think that there's several plants that can be useful that way for people. And if you go back into history, the shamans used plants, including cannabis and many other, I've even heard
mushrooms.
They didn't want to let the common man know about it, the rest of the tribe, because if they took it, they would have those insights too, and then the shaman wouldn't be the shaman anymore. So there was kind of a hoarding of who got to use it, who did it, and what it did for the person. And that's true. That's a part of our real history about those kind of plants. So, and Terrence McKenna, he talks about mushrooms and all kinds of other things as well. And I've loved his lectures. And actually, Bill Hicks, the evolution of man through these ethogens, are part of the routine. He's actually influenced by Terrence McKenna in his material. So, find that interesting.
Well, it's interesting, and it is part of this spiritual consciousness. I mean, this has been rolling out for 40 years or so, you know, since the 60s. And there were negative sides to that as well. I mean, I remember watching people who had bad acid trips and watching people do, horrible things because they were using methamphetamine and things like that. I don't advocate the use of those drugs. And quite honestly, anybody that's going to use entheogens, you need to be aware of what you're doing. I'm not so sure at this point I want to do ayahuasca. I've never done it. But the more I've thought about it, I don't think I need it. And I also have concerns, much like LSD, which I did once, you kind of rips holes in you. you know, and you, so you have to be careful about this stuff. That's not to say you shouldn't do it. It's a personal decision, but you go in fully apprised of the risks of using these things on the quote, you know, recreational level. I don't consider it recreational. Some of this is inner journey stuff. And certainly for me, like the peyote and the mushrooms were like that. Mushrooms for me are like, that's like a holy sacrament.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I'm with you on it. And I do agree that there might be some things that aren't good to use. And the ripping of a hole and everything. When you talked about LSD, we know that LSD came out of the military industrial complex and it was used in all kinds of experiments and things like this. And so it was dropped into our culture.
Yeah, it was.
It muddied everything up. It muddied the cannabis. It made, you know, and of course it made cannabis on a Schedule I drug with it out of the 60s because the people who were like protesting against the Vietnam War were the very people that were smoking cannabis using LSD. And then you can go into how, you know, even go into the lie of how the music was created to actually create this kind of movement on the backside out of Laurel Canyon, which I've been reading about that too as well. And I find that all fascinating to think that even that had an influence by the people that are pulling the strings of the first place.
You know, and you know, we got to give the tip of the hat here to the late Dave McGowan, because Dave really broke that stuff out years ago. Sadly, he's not with us anymore, but that work, you know, that's a shocker when you realize it. I've dug really deep into the background of, you know, the Beatles and things like that and come to realize that, yeah, we were set up.
Yeah.
But on the same token, they may have started the ball running, but they opened up something else. You know, and this needs to be said about the cabal right now, because I've been saying this for years. You guys opened the can on a whole bunch of shit that you can't control anymore. And now, as a result of that, a lot of us have woken up and a lot of us have started to peer into things that you didn't want us to look into, all as a result of your little mind game experiments. The most dangerous people on the planet right now to the establishment are the people they screwed with the most. I know, because I've talked to them. I know who they are. The people that came out of government programs like MyLabs and MKUltra and Monarch and all these other experimental programs. And what happened was, once they got their memories back, once they managed to glue back together their psyche, they're dangerous people to the establishment now. And we're gonna harness that power. And I really think that, you know, the big lesson with all of this is this culture creation bullshit is backfiring on them, mainly because they can't control the consciousness wave that's now hitting.
That's people exciting. Like that's getting people like me, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's fine. And that's giving them notice, too. They've been warned.
Right.
Because they want to screw with us, that's fine. But you don't control the spirituality of humanity anymore. That's been unpacked.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hearing you say this gives me hope and the realization of it, because a lot of times you look out there and it doesn't feel that way. You know, sometimes that you're talking on deaf ears and really we can't compare the deaf ears to when we walk out our door and we greet our neighbors on the street. I mean, they might, you know, respond or whatever, but I guess it's really doing these kind of shows where somebody's going to listen to it or find it on YouTube and go, wait a second, let me research some more about what they're talking about and kind of pique their mind, because I know that I was that person and I still am that person. I get people sending YouTube videos, I find something else and there's a whole nother pith load of information that comes out and I'm like, oh my, you know, and so it adds another aspect to the puzzle of everything. But yeah, it is, as they say, you know, in the Bible, like we do not, the battle is not of flesh and blood, but of
principle. No, it's not.
It's not. On a whole other level. And that scripture passage kept coming up to me during the past few months and realizing just where that level is, too, is it. Yeah.
Say, why don't we take like a break here? We're almost halfway through the show already.
Oh.
And we come back on the other side of this thing. What we're going to do is we're going to go into your experiences of the last few months, and the dark side of Hollywood and the evil things that lurk behind the scene in the shadows of Hollywood. We'll do all that when we come back on the other side of Off Planet TV. We'll be back in about 6 minutes.
Great. Yeah. You see, I grew up in America. I grew up in the land where phrases like, I have a dream, meant something. I grew up where I believed that freedom existed, that that's what I was fighting for. I believed that the Statue of Liberty was a symbol of our liberty, that we all came from all over the world because we didn't want to live underneath the monarchy, that our founding fathers made America the land of the free and the land of the brave. I don't care what you say to me. I don't care if there's a shadow government or there's people out there that's trying to take it away from us. I don't care about that. Because I believe that because we believe it, we can do something about it. We grew up different. I think something happened with the Federal Reserve. I think the bankers are in on it. And this is
I do give a shout out to my friends. Yeah, I'm definitely I'm actually a marijuana activist, and I can tell you like how that kind of like came about for me in a sort of different way. At first, I could kind of take it or leave it when I was growing up. I mean, I wasn't like a stoner chick in high school or anything like that. But what I do like about marijuana is that it changes your perspective on reality, right? And these aren't easy times, so sometimes I feel like I need it. Like I'm like, fuck it, I can't pay rent. Universe will give it to me. Right? You know, and I started to think about it, like no one's ever died from smoking marijuana, ever. In the history of mankind, nobody's ever died from smoking marijuana. I always want to know why. Why is that? Like, that makes me want to just go out and smoke it just blatantly. It's illegal? I'm not dying from it. More and more. Oh, I'm so high. I'm so alive. Ha, 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 ha. You know? I'm still here.
Yeah, that's right. We can take
a now
back.
I see the Bush.
We got the
super
power. Do you know
you
that there are like acts of terrorism, right? The promise of 72 virgins? How does that work? Why would somebody do something like that just because they want to have virgins? And this is the afterlife. What happens when that person's done all those 72 virgins? Then you just have 72 women calling you up like, why haven't you called me? I'm pregnant. What do you mean it's not yours? You're the only one. America, damn it, and I'm taking it back.
I'm back. Yeah, with second half of Off Planet TV. Wow, it's, you know, it, sometimes we do shows and they're serious, and sometimes we do shows and they're serious, but we're serious tonight, but we're being sort of light about it.
Yeah.
My guest is Tara Joyce. Her website is freedomofjoyce.net. It's on the screen down there or somewhere. And Tara, you also host a radio show. You have a lot of projects going. Talk about your projects a little bit, what you're working on, where you're at.
Okay. Well, the main thing is that I have a radio show three times a week on American Freedom Radio. And that's at AmericanFreedomRadio.com. That's Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays, 3 to 5 p.m. Pacific time. that's my primary thing that I have going on right now. I have done some live streaming, you know, on different projects and things, and I do some video work and stuff like that. But right now, and I'm also on the Time for Hemp Network. I'm on the Time for Hemp Network on Tuesdays and Thursdays and iHeartRadio, so I'm covering the cannabis issue over there. I do stand up still here and there. I'm actually working on wanting to do a one-woman show with the same title, Freedom of Joyce, and to be able to talk about the things I'm talking about on Freedom of Joyce into people like us. And so I'm planning on doing a show and live streaming it for people to see it on the internet. So yeah, that's my next venture as well.
Yeah, the internet's really giving people like you a chance to break out and not be slaves to Hollywood.
Yeah.
That's what I was saying earlier in the show tonight. No, we really do. We have opportunities here right now. We have a window that we can kind of walk through to do this type of media. What Conscious Consumer Network has done in building a live streaming video network, for instance. And so, you know, to the listeners out there, I would just say this. You need to support this media. I won't preach about it. I'll just say, you know, support CCN, support Terry Joyce, support me. And that means a lot of different things. Sometimes it's even just, you know, upvoting our videos, liking us on Facebook, doing things like that. Social media props help as well. But we do have this opportunity now because the Hollywood machine, the history of Hollywood, I don't know how much you've dug into this history of Hollywood.
I've been doing my digging.
Yeah. What you find out is that it looks to me like certain elites early on of certain, well, shall we say, persuasions were set up to build an industry. The early film industry was actually in New Jersey, New York, New Jersey area. And Thomas Edison, of course, was, he was a prime mover at that point because he invented motion pictures. But Hollywood and its history, if you go back and look at it, real early on, there's dark shit going on. You know, and I'm thinking back even now, some of the murder mysteries that occurred. If you go look up, here's something, listeners, you can look up. Go look up Fatty Arbuckle and find out about him. You begin to find out that Satanism and various dark spiritual forces infiltrated Hollywood very early. It infiltrated it both in terms of the people themselves and even the subject matter. Hollywood is kind of the test media for what we would accept in being put in front of our eyes, bearing in mind, of course, too, that this media, unlike previous media, which was basically photography, radio at that point, we didn't quite yet have television, placed the power of moving frames in front of our eyes. And the science that went into that and the psychology that went into it of being able to induce hypnotic states, which then went into advertising and going into subliminal programming using imagery. All of this was programmatically being designed to get to where we are today, because now we have these great big IMAX theaters, immersive entertainment, surround sound, full immersion. And we're basically giving our minds over to people who are masters at controlling them. You have walked into a world you didn't expect to see.
Yes. Yeah, I did not expect to see this.
The dark side of this is so, I know, because we talked about it.
Yeah.
And you and I, you know, you and I have had some pretty wild conversations over the last couple of years. I mean, when we got to know each other, thanks to our mutual friend, Leslie.
Shout out to Leslie.
Shout out to Leslie K in San Diego. Yes. But, you know, along the way, we've kind of shared, you know, some of the weird things, the wild things that have gone on, because when you go into alternative media, as I did, and kind of jumped into the dark side of things, and you've done it as well.
Yeah.
You've sort of invited the experience that comes with it.
Right.
I think for all of us, frankly, we invited that early in our lives, because what I found out doing this show for many years was that most of us had contacts with things that we didn't understand, experiences we didn't understand, and people in our lives that didn't make a lot of sense.
Right.
You learned something recently. You saw some things, and I want you to tell that story.
Okay. Thank you. I guess where I can start is a little bit of my, I had my own research about what was going on in Hollywood by being the Truth Media. Like, I did find out that the Hollywood is from the Holly Tree, that's the sorcerer's wand, and the occult influence on what Hollywood is. And I find it interesting that Los Angeles is known as the city of angels, but you're kind of like, well, what kind of angels are we talking about here? You know, is another question. And I lived in Pasadena for a long time. That was my town. I kept kind of going back there all the time for some reason. I'd move and then I'd be regravitated there again. Well, then I found out, you know, Aleister Crowley, you know, there was Jack Parsons and Anton LaVey, all practicing black magic. Yeah. It has to do with Jack Parsons and it has to do with JPL. And I felt connected to JPL because I knew people from JPL. I know the scientists, the current ones now. I was very integrated in the Pasadena society. And so it was until I moved out of Pasadena that I went, wait, Pasadena wasn't what I thought it was. You know, when you realize that they're having like orgy, you know, satanic orgies on, you know, Orange Boulevard, you know, in Pasadena, I'm like, oh my God, you know, I know that street. You know, it's just, there is that underbelly to realize that it happened. Now, getting back to my own personal story, I've had people in my life that I've known for, I'd say, 25 years or more, that after I had the cannabis incident where I was on the paper and stuff like that, they kind of peered into my life, sort of became a sort of, you know, like a mentor. Person, you know, these people are really connected to Hollywood. They come from Hollywood families and would talk to me about psychic stuff and, you know, there's aliens and, you know, there's, you know, and what was interesting in the process of this particular relationship that I had, you know, he'd given me a computer for my birthday, which was a little Acer notebook. And it was that computer that I really just started looking at stuff, you know, like what is this and what is that and the reptilians and, you know, and I was processing a lot of information really, really quickly. And then he would come back to me and talk to me about reptilians as if we had already had a previous conversation. And I thought, well, this is interesting. Why do you think it's okay for you to talk to me about that? Like, how do you know that I'm going to be open to the idea of what you're discussing? So we'd have these kind of things would be sprinkled in my life. Well, as the Truth Media has taken off and I've been doing a show now for 2 years or whatever, apparently the people on the guys, the Illuminati or whoever they are, you know, I guess maybe I have caused a ruckus on some levels and specifically in some of the information that I'm talking about. So I had a later conversation with this person many years later, not involved romantically or something like that, just kind of a dinner type of thing. And I was waiting for it. It was weird. It was like, it was almost like I had a psychic premonition of this happening. When is somebody going to tell me, you know, that they're onto it now? When did I cross over and get myself maybe, you know, where, you know, they're watching or whatever. And I got the, well, I can't believe you're still alive saying what you're saying right now. Kind of, you know, is what this person said to me. And, you know, and you know, when, you know, we have, you know, I'm a P.F. Chang's, you know, it almost felt like it was kind of weird, but to me, it felt like the reality kind of flipped, like almost like the universe, like the energy changed too. And it was really weird, you know, and I'm sitting there and I'm like, okay. But I'm calm still for some reason. And he says, so, you know, well, congratulations, people are listening to you and they're watching you. Okay. Like the cabal or whatever, you know? And I'm like, and I'm thinking to myself, like, part of me goes, well, why? I mean, like, really, you know? And so I thought, okay, fine. Obviously there must be some sort of chord, I've struck a chord here somewhere. And, you know, I was kind of like being coached to accept Hillary as a president, you know, like not be too hard on Hillary when I talk. You know, there was also conversations of, well, maybe I'm going to be around to teach the younger generations. We had an Anunnaki conversation, you know, because I guess like one of the recent alien movies, the recent one talks about how the Anunnaki created the human race and stuff like this. And so, and I was like, yeah. And then this person that I've known for a really long time basically admitted to me that he was, and by the way, I'm reptilian. And I'm not the only one that you slept with. And I was just like, I don't mean to make a joke about it, but I'm like, how many reptilians have I been with? Oh my God. You know, it's like, I'm such a whore, you know? And so, and I'm thinking like, oh, who else is he talking about? And that was like, that's my, I'm sorry. I admitted it that way, but you know, it's like, hey, we were involved. I was like, wow, I've been sleeping with not only reptilians, real, I've been having sex with them. This is terrible news. And, you know, it was kind of, you know, shocking to me, but I, you know, it's like, and so then at that point I was like, oh my God, there really are reptilians. Because it, you know, it when I'm going, yeah, I think so, whatever. But when you have somebody that you're very, very close to say that, and I have great, he's not a crazy person. I have great respect for him, you know, to go, I'm what?
Just for the sake of, I guess, the listeners to this show are fairly hardened, but.
Oops.
How the hell does that work exactly? I'm a reptilian, and yet I'm sitting here having a conversation with you. I know this isn't me. I'm not a reptilian.
Wait, okay.
Just for the sake of argument, a casual dinner, some drinks, you know, an especially nice Chateaubriand or something. And oh, by the way, I am a lizard.
Right. And then, you know, and then yeah. And he said something to me. Okay, this is, and this struck me in my heart. I have to think about this. But then I began to wonder, maybe this is a setup too. But it was like, he says, I know what you're talking. Don't blow the pilot light out. You know, don't not have compassion still. Like, don't, like, in a sense, like, it's, if you hate us just like we're doing to you, then you are just like us. So it's almost like you have to step up beyond that and go, yeah, this is a fact. A lot of us are hybrids, and there are the human race is not what we think we are, you know, and this is part of the new reality. And so my thought is, it's like, well, maybe they are maybe he is, you know, reptilian, but, or there's reptilian DNA, but is every person that's reptilian, like people, oh, that's the bad guy. Isn't there, aren't all souls having an evolution up to the higher realms, or am I naive in thinking that? That's what I don't know.
I think a lot of that lies in the margins of things we don't know right now, Terry, in terms of the nature of extraterrestrial beings, if they are in fact extraterrestrial, or they're extra dimensional, or they're inside of our own planet. I mean, I'm not satisfied that everything that's odd and strange is coming from outer space, first off, because I don't think we know a lot about our own planet. I don't think we know much about the dimensions that surround us. Having said all that, I leave open that there are, in fact, benevolence. There have been benevolence, that we are being assisted by benevolent beings. And at the same time, humanity was placed in this cauldron where we were sort of left to fend for ourselves, so to speak, both by spiritual descent into this realm and through, you know, I guess what you would call the evolutionary process, but not the Darwinian one, the consciousness process. So are there good ones? I'd like to think so. And I actually do believe that. But at the same time, the nature of what we're dealing with here is that we have a parasitic class of beings that have used humanity largely harvesting as food, energy, and basically pulling off of something in us that they themselves don't possess.
Yeah, I know. So do you want to know about the Hollywood party?
Okay, yep, basically, let's go there.
Let me get to the core of what happened, because I was invited to a birthday party, and I was doing a show called American Hymn Trust with it was a comedy based sort of like all-woman show talking about how they their relationship to cannabis. And and the person that I was doing this with, and I'm just going to make this little connection here because it does pertain to my life personally as well as something else that's going on. She had actually she had a moment of extreme stress, she says, in her personal life, and she heard a voice that told her to drive her car into the Getty Museum, which is at the Getty Museum here in Los Angeles, California. Okay, and there's a guy named Stephen D. Kelly that's a whistleblower and a radio show host that worked with the CIA and the NSA. Talks about the Getty Museum being an area that has an underground facility connected to all the other underground bases that if they do human sacrificing and child sacrificing, etc. And it's part of the Queens little location to go to when, you know, stuff like this, you know, goes down. So it was interesting to looking back, because when I met her and she told me that, I did not know this book, the story, Stephen, or I was not in the truth media. It's just something that I thought. I go, well, did you get arrested? Did they admit you into a facility? And she's like, no, they just like, you know, cleaned it up and everything went on my life went as usual. And I'm like, why? I mean, wouldn't that be, I found that to be suspect that they just kind of covered it up and acted like it never really happened. And so this is the woman that invited me to her party. Now, when I got there, I was told that I wasn't to bring a guest because it was at a very prominent manager, talent manager, and I'm not going to say his name because I want to protect him. But and he doesn't live too far from where I'm living at right now. And because of this, you know, there's only certain people that are allowed to come onto his property. He has a special bar there that, you know, and he has managed like major talent. And also he has something to do with this show, Last Comic Standing, that I was on. He is part of one of the, you know, major managers that were bringing talent to the network and to the series. So that being said, I go there, and the minute I get there, there's a huge statue of a lizard, huge statue of a reptile on the patio when you're like starting to go into the entrance. I'm like, well, I don't remember that being there the last time I was here, because I had hung out with January there before when we were doing American Hemptress. And look, now I have actually had photo things. I've done more research. I find out that I recognize it as being Pindar, which is the reptilian that apparently comes to California for human sacrifices, actually. And so I get into the party, and ironically, there's these stools, and they all have like a number on them, 13, blah, 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 blah. And I happen to just sit at number 11, you know, which for whatever reason. And so, but I mean, you said it because it sets up part of the story. When I met the play, it was, you know, because there's a jukebox you play any songs on, and for free. And so I thought, oh, let me play something. And I thought I was playing Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. And some guy was playing pool there, and he goes, oh, that's a cool song, you know, blah, blah, love it, great choice. I'm thinking, oh, I'm glad that my great choice made a mistake.
Your band went fritzed out, and I didn't hear what the song
was. Yeah, I did.
It's doing it again.
It was Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Okay,
it was
the Beatles song. Huh?
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I got
it. So the guy liked it, gave me the thumbs up, and then he goes, "Oh, do you know that the song is about Aleister Crowley?" And I go, "Oh no, I didn't know that, but I remember he was on the album and everything." And I look up and I see these like little bullhorn, you know, like a bull, you know, and all of a sudden I just get this feeling like, "Whoa, wait a second here." You know, I mean, that comet came out, the horns came up. But I just kind of dismissed it. And time goes on, and some of my friends that are involved with the entertainment industry come from Hollywood families. They are involved in the cannabis movement. They've done documentary films with Jack Hare, and they're, you know, working with one of the major proponents here. And they were also my friends that I was in Occupy with, which I'm almost, you know, it's 100% sure that it's been infiltrated by people who are camped out being protesters that come from satanic families and the military-industrial complex. Okay. And apparently I was hanging out with them thinking that they were the real deal, you know, in some ways. And so we get into the party, and then it goes on, and there's some alcohol being served. Okay. Because that's what they want to give you so that you open up to the other spirits that alcohol allows you to have. And basically this comes out in conversation. So alcohol's and serve the birthday girl gets way, way, way intoxicated. Okay. And she ends up eventually the floor, at which point I went over to her and I said, how are you doing? Happy birthday. Are you okay? And she's like kind of in this quasi weird state. She said something like, she goes, I'm a god, divine goddess, and I have kinetic energy, and I'm so powerful. I'm so powerful. So she's kind of going off on this kind of weird thing. And her boyfriend, or, you know, his name is Magic, who actually, there's a long story about him, and I don't have enough time to talk about the marijuana movement. He has a character where he has a marijuana head leaf. And he has done sketches of himself as a cartoon. He's a cartoon character too, with the eye of Horus on the cannabis plant, in which I had, not understanding everything, had an aversion to the image and questioned him on that. And I said, why do you have the eye? Why is this on the cannabis plant? And they go, oh, his dad is a Mason. And I'm like, oh, well, who cares? You know, it's still not the right thing. So he comes, that's his little basis. But I have pictures of him where he actually looks like he's shape-shifting, to be really honest with you. So things go on. Another girl comes into the mix. She's from the Hollywood family that that it was occupying the marijuana filmmakers like that. We start hanging out and we start talking, and she's having a conversation with me. There's another girl that starts talking to me about how she had an abortion and how because she was able to kill a life, it gave her the power of what she thought that God was, which is basically a satanic, you know, thought process. But she's having this conversation with me, and I'm like, oh, okay. And I start to feel a little weird at this point. And I look at her and I go, what's going on in here? Like the energy is just really weird. And again, even Melissa, oops, I said her name. She actually said, you know, at one point, oh, did you feel that? And I go, what, you mean the change in energy? She goes, yeah. She goes, like, that doesn't happen every day. It does it. And she's like making a big deal about it. I'm like, whatever. And so basically I get really uncomfortable, and I look at the other lady and I say, it's really, the energy is really weird in here. And she goes, well, what do you think's going on? She goes, the alcohol has been certain. She goes, the demons have been unleashed and people are facing their demons right now. And at this point, I was just like, I got to get some air. I can't breathe right now. I wanted to just bolt out of that building as fast as I could. And I ran outside, and Melissa, the filmmaker, followed me out there. She follows me out there to the patio, and there's the big, you know, lizard statue. And she goes, she goes, do you want me with you? Do you not want me with you? Should I leave or whatever? And I said, no, I was really scared. I was like, no, I just think maybe it's better that you're with me. And I go, there's some really bad energy in that room. And she goes, well, what do you think you're at? She goes, you're at a lizard party. She goes, look at the statue. This is a room, this is reptilians. And I said, okay, well, you know what? I go, I'm going to go home now. I'm going to go home now. And she looked at me and she goes, oh, so do you think that you're just going to go back in your car? You think you're just going to go back in your car? You're going to drive home like business like usual? And I didn't care for the way she was talking to me. I'm like, I almost felt like she was like, no, you're not going home, and you're going to come back to this party, and you're going to do what we already planned for you. Your life is screwed, was kind of like how I was interpreting, you know, I was, you know, feeling. And I go, no, I was really kind of caught in between I was outside of the house a little bit, and she's like, well, come back in here. She goes, we don't want the neighbors to be alerted about what's, you know, going on, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm still kind of like on the fence of wanting to go home, but stay there. And then she kept going, hey, well, at least come over here to this patio area. There's this foosball thing going on. Like, I want to follow her outside to someplace else in the dark, you know, and have a conversation. And she's like, well, you've got to come in and you've got to take these photos of the birthday cake and the birthday and everything else because you're the only, my, I can't do it. My cell phone's not working right. And she shows me how it kind of went dead. And she goes, you have to upload these pictures to Instagram and be part of January's birthday. And then she kept trying to get me to go on this other outside patio area, which I just instinctively was like, no freaking way. If I follow you out there, this is what I saw in my head, that they were waiting for me. Like there was a ceremony out there ready for me, you know, and they were going to, I mean, I don't know if they're going to sacrifice me. I don't know what was going to happen, but I felt really creeped out about the fact that she wanted me to go someplace else. And I was just like, I am not going anywhere. And the main thing is that I didn't even want to stay there at all in the first place. So I go into the party and I go back. I go back into the party because I'm figuring through this. I'll take these pictures and I'll eventually go. I'm just look, we'll make sure that you get back to your car. But I'm still not literally Randy. I'm still not sure. Like, I'm not sure what's really going to happen here for a minute. Now, the thing about the 11 on the stool, okay, I sat on the 11 stool. There was a 13 stool, which was like a little bit farther down. And this girl, when she first came in, she was like, she goes, oh, well, I want to sit on the 11. And I was like, oh, okay, well, then I'll go on the 13. She goes, oh, are you sure that you can handle the 13? Like, she's like, you know, and I go, yeah, I think I can sit on 13. I think that's, you know, fine. Well, again, I ended up back on the other chair and she ended up sitting on 13, which I thought was kind of interesting. I don't know if that really means anything, but it was kind of, to me, it's kind of symbolic.
You don't happen to recall the numbers, do you? And the reason why I'm asking you is there's what's called the Crowley sequence, which is a very specific sequence of numbers that includes 9, 11, 13, and 33.
Oh, that's interesting. I do believe there was a 9, 11, and a 13. I'm not sure about 33.
I almost guarantee there was a 33 there somewhere. The 11 can actually be multiplied as well, so... The reason why I ask you that is because if there was an order, there was also an energetic that was attached to each one of those seats. Those were a mechanism to identify. So, interesting.
Oh, okay. Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and then we would have we would have strange conversations, like all of a sudden magic would be saying, when I came back in, oh, and there was a cake that everybody signed. Everybody signed the cake, which I thought was interesting. They want everybody to sign the cake. And the girl that was the filmmaker, well, I've already said her name. So Melissa would be sitting back and going, oh, maybe I'll just like have, eat a bunch of cake. And I would die. I'm going to die. And I'll die from a diabetic coma or something. I don't know. Which I thought, are you dying? You know, I mean, okay, this is where the theory that I'm getting to kind of, and magic was the guy who, had the cannabis, you know, headpiece and everything like that. And he started saying things like he kept going in the back going, the truth media, like he was jabbing me for the media that I was, associated with, which I thought was odd because I hadn't spoken to him in years. And I go, why are you antagonizing me with like this, you know, anti-truth media crap? And then Melissa would go, oh, freedom of choice is just everywhere. What's up with that? You know, it is if there was kind of this sort of like weird envy. But then she was trying to do a show with me. We should do some episodes together, blank, 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 blank. You know, because I felt like there was this, you know, dangle of we want to do an American Hemptress show with you so that we can also use it for the to perpetuate our ballot, our petition that we want to get on the ballot. So there's all these, they're always wanting to use you for their purposes, right? And so I felt like they were just in this haphazard weird way trying to make these sort of deals with me, which I'm thinking, well, this cannabis is a big issue, and you know, basically the fact that I've been talking about it the way I have on the internet for as much time, I guess it's like it needs to be incorporated in some way or controlled in some way. It was kind of the feeling that I got. And, you know, believe me, if you have a good search engine optimization on the internet and you're talking about a certain thing in a certain way, that does have a lot of clout. And it's not like the internet goes away because, you know, your material stays up and it can That's be found right. from all kinds of different areas. So it's being run amok, and it's not necessarily, I'm definitely not presenting cannabis the way the mainstream media is. As a matter of fact, I abhor it and I point a finger at it and I go, look what they're doing over here, trying to integrate this over here. And so I think that has probably some of the reason why they're all coming out of the woodwork. Now, these are people that I had trusted for a really long time as being, having the heart of, you know, causes for the greater good of people. And then I begin to realize that there's something strange about them, and they're practicing and they're acting in a kind of an occult way. Well, Magic is sitting behind the bar, and he's pointing around looking at some of us that are sitting there, and he goes, okay, so, well, I know I'm different, and you're different, and you're different, and you're different. You know you come from where you're at. You can do what you do, whatever. So I know you're real, and you know I'm real. And I'm like, okay, where's this going to? And then he goes, and by the way, I'm schizophrenic. And I'm like, what? You know, it's just like really bizarre conversations going on. But I kind of like felt like he was pointing me out, like almost as if he's saying, like, you're not really human either. So obviously you're something, and you're not saying what you are, but I know that you are it. So you can just be quiet, you know. So I know you're you. By the way, I'm schizophrenic. You know, I mean, it kind of had that sort of, you know, feeling to it. You know, whether we're talking about, I mean, because I think there's some of us, and some of it has to do with, your incarnations and you know, maybe what your DNA is in some ways, but there's certain abilities that some people have more that are natural, and you can, maybe there's magic stuff going on, I could even see magic, like, you know, doing like little magic tricks in the corner, like as if we're supposed to be impressed. You know, it's like, why are you showing off? You know, kind of thing. So all these weird, I was observing them, all these weird kind of little elements were going on. And, but I'm still creeped out. And literally I almost felt, well, I almost wondered if that cake was really for me, and that the intention was like, we are celebrating you, but we're transferring your energy into one of us, or something's going to be happening where, you know, you're going to be eliminated too. I just felt that way. There was this other man that kept coming around me, and it's like he knew me. Because I think he must be like he's kind of like a security guard or whatever, you know, on the premises. And he would, and I go, it's really weird in here. And he goes, yeah. Well, you know, sometimes it's like that. Sometimes it happens that way. You know, they check you out or whatever. You know, he's kind of like saying these kind of things. And it really did feel like there was as if there was a sink or a shift in the actual reality, almost like as if I was in a parallel reality that was juxtaposed to another reality. Was the feeling that I had, and it felt very, very. Yeah. Strange. And that was the shift that the girl had said that had happened. It had shifted into another reality. And I was definitely feeling that it really was about something to do with me. There was a certain control that was happening, and that January was either drugged or put under alcohol for a certain reason, because her energy was being processed as part of the whole thing as well. And when we went to leave, and this is the tip off that I really thought was like, okay, yeah, was that there was another person who was driving me to my car. And he also said, when we got out to the patio, he goes, hey, have you seen that foosball thing around the courtyard? It's really freaking cool. We should go, you know, we should go over there and take a look at it. And it, you know, it's like, it's dark. It's like, why the hell am I going to want to go out and look at this thing? So I also felt that there was one more attempt to get me to go around the corner to be in a space of what was maybe intended for me. And when I say that, you know, I believe that if I had given myself permission, if I'd followed them out there, then I would have given the permission for them to do what they were doing. And it was up to me to say, no, I'm not going out there, and then go to my car and go home.
That actually is one of the great lessons to all of this, even in paranormal encounters, is being aware of your surroundings and understanding levels of permission. Most people don't realize they have the ability to back out of these situations in some way. And unfortunately, the deeper in you go, the more dangerous it gets until it escalates. It sounds to me like you had a good awareness, even though you were very surprised by what happened. When you say the atmosphere shifted, and don't worry about the clock right now, we're just going to talk here.
Okay.
When you say the atmosphere shifted, tell me a little bit about what you observed and what you felt, because this is important for people to hear.
Well, getting there anyway, I mean, like the minute I got there, I kind of had a feeling that something was up because I saw the statue and whatever. But when it shifted, at first I didn't really pay attention to it. I mean, I was I was in the middle of a conversation. So I was aware that something had kind of done. I hadn't really identified it because sometimes I get really one-tracked. And a lot of times I feel energy shift anyways, just because, okay. I didn't realize that it was to the level that it was. And so it was Melissa that pointed it out to me. And she was like, ooh. And like for other people to hear too, like everybody else would have been involved or people around. Did you feel that? Did you feel the energy shift? You know? And then when I said, yeah, and I was sort of blasé about it, she goes, oh, like, you know, you're like, that happens every day. Yeah. Terry Joyce act like it's like no big deal. And what I could say is that it just kind of, it's like I could see more, you know what I mean? It's like when she goes, oh, the demons are here. It's almost like I could see it out of my peripheral vision, you know, it felt not necessarily maybe it got colder, a little bit, you know, even when I went outside, I was cold. I started shivering, and it was kind of like you can kind of feel it in your back. It's just like everything just feels like you're just in sync with something different, and that's just the only thing that's the only way that I can describe it. Yeah, and it felt
I wanted to get that from you. Yeah.
I felt unsafe. Like I felt that there was something that I had a real urgency to get away from that area, from them. And I don't normally feel that way about people. I mean, I really had a strong, like, I really just want to be home with my cat. And I want to wake up the next morning. Sure, life's not perfect, but whatever. It's, you know, I don't want to walk down this path. And it's interesting to see what they did afterwards. I had, you know, phone calls that were, you know, hey, Terry, you know, like, as everything's really cool, hey, what's up, you know. And also just recently she did call me again to try to get this comedy show going. And I go, all right, I'm thinking, well, you know, maybe I'll see, just to test her. I go, well, maybe we can meet at a restaurant or something like that, like a public place. And she goes, oh, no, let's meet at so-and-so's house, which is the very manager's party that I went to. She tried to get me back there again to meet her again last Sunday, actually. And then I said, well, you know, I'm going to be doing some work in Hollywood. I can come out where your way and it would be more convenient. She goes, no, that's his place is fine. And we could go into the other part of the house too. We don't have to just stay at the bar. Like that was going to be like way, like I get to be one of the cool people and hang out with the cool comics, you know, it used to be a plus, like to be invited to that place used to be a big deal. Like only certain people got to, now I don't even want to get like 10 feet with, you know, with that Pindar statue, you know, it's, yeah. So yeah, I've been coerced to go back. So.
Your experience is obviously way off scale. I mean, most people don't encounter this. On the other hand, you know, I've known for a lot of years and I've had people recount stories to me of things like this. And being aware of what's going on around us is so important in certain atmospheres, because what that particular atmosphere does is it gets you comfortable and then it lures you in. And anybody that's ever been in this situation, I've seen it in clubs. I saw it a lot when I was younger in clubs. That type of atmosphere is an induction of an altered state that then allows you to be pulled into something else. And I mean, there's cold cases out there. There's books that have been written about people that disappear under these same circumstances all the time, and especially in Hollywood.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how many people know how many children disappear each year. Places like Disney World, off the streets of New York and Los Angeles, they're lured there by something that's glamorous. And this really is how evil operates. You know, we look at the horror movies, the Freddy Kruegers or something that's... Oh, is that your cat there?
Yeah, yeah.
He's inviting him in. Bring him in. We like cats here.
Okay. Here's This is
yes, we definitely invite the cat to come on. That's good. So, you know, in a lot of ways, your experience is something that people can glean from and understand that the evil that we think we're facing isn't this cartoon thing. It has a mask, and the mask is human. And the mask is very sociable, very expansive, and will offer you all kinds of opportunities, but there's a price that gets paid for all that. And whether they want to do a ceremony with you, the sacrifice, you know, quite frankly, they might not have killed you. They might have done something far worse, and that would have been to harvest your soul or your spirit. And, you know, that's the serious consequences of the kind of world that we live in at high levels of Satanism, which is really what this is. I mean, the reptilian aspect to it is creepy, but at the end of the day, it's just Satanism, and Hollywood has lived off of that for decades now.
Yeah, they have. And it was definitely an eye-opening situation. And, you know, now I'm at the point where, you know, who wants to go back to work for them? I mean, how could you do that? I mean, I'm discerning who's who in my life. You know, a lot of them showed themselves, and I'm still at a point where it's kind of like, all right, I know you're there. I haven't made any big stance. I'm just wanting to like have it gradually separate, and go on. But yeah, I've had them try to lure me back. It's not the first time that I've had this happen with people. I've had other people say some strange things and want to work with me. And then I'd say, well, what is it that you want me to do? And they'll show these names that are, you know, people that are buried in the Hollywood Forever cemetery next to a Masonic temple and say, well, these people, names, Getty names in there. I mean, you know, famous old stars want to walk the green carpet again. And I'm like, what? Like they're gonna come into me and do that? Is that what you're presenting to me? Because that's just weird. But they did, and they do, and I think that they have been, and that is what happens. They do want to either possess you or hijack you, or at least if they're not going to kill you, then you're not going to be you anymore either.
Well, we talked earlier about the level of permission of giving your consent for all of this. Careers are built on that. And there is a sacrificial level to it. As you know, there's an expiration date on the contracts. You know, the famous movie that was made with Ralph Macchio years ago, Crossroads, based on the Robert Johnson story. The fables about, and these are not fables, the deaths of rock musicians at the age of 27. Mm-hmm. Again, the Crossroads contract, the trifecta of nines. Jimi Hendrix, Brian Jones, Janis Joplin, Jim Morrison, Kurt Cobain, go right down the line. You know, these are not coincidences. They're too numerically significant. A lot of the entertainment industry is built on deals that are made on a soul level that many people aren't aware of. And they're also based on mind control projects. Certainly what we know now about what's going on in Hollywood, we know that there were projects being run that were grooming people to step into show business. And by the way, we can go longer, and as long as you're good.
Oh,
with
sure, yeah, I'm good. I'm like, you know, and my kitty's probably going to come on my lap, but he actually okay. does a lot of shows with me.
The cat's great. No, we love cats. Yeah, here.
I do too. Yeah. Well, one thing too is I learned too is that cats don't hang around demons.
That's right. That's right. You know, they're smarter.
I had a question. They go, were there any cats there? And I go, no. And they go, okay.
Yeah. Why is it that they always portray witches with cats? You know,
right.
Not that witches are, that's another separate issue. You know,
yeah.
I know people that practice Wiccan, and that's a separate issue as well. But, you know, we blend it all out because Hollywood made gigantic fortunes out of selling us all this stuff and convoluting our sense of evil. I mean, that's probably the greatest thing. It's how they blurred the lines so that we can't discern evil and understand that evil comes sometimes in the forms of beautiful women alluring drugs, large mansions, large fortunes, and things that we are induced into liking. And, you know, that's the trap. The alternative media, let's let's turn that page for a minute.
Uh-huh.
The alternative media obviously is now matured to the point where, you know, it has become that as well. And I know that you've seen some of the insights into that. I'm not looking for you to dish or name names, but I'm kind of at the place right now, and I've known this for probably about 4 years, that a lot of what's passed off now as alternative media is intelligence operations, people that are employed by military assets, and people who have an agenda to hijack the alternative media away from telling the truth into contorting it into something that's, again, moving people in a certain scripted manner. You and I talked a little bit privately about what happened and what has been going on up in Oregon, the occupation of the Wildlife Center, obviously the shooting of Lavoie Finicum, and what I suspect was that you've confirmed as well, that that was an infiltrated, perhaps even staged movement.
I do feel that that is highly a possibility. I have a connection to that whole, all of that, because I had interviewed Ryan Payne, who's one of the main militia guys that's arrested now for it. And when I first joined a particular network, I was very new to it and kind of naive. I go, nobody else wanted to interview the militia. And I said, okay, I'll do it. And I was interested in what they did as it was pertaining to the Second Amendment. When I first looked at the situation, I saw the BLM tasering them. I'm very interested in the police state kind of actions happening. I thought it was interesting that it was a land issue. And I thought, hey, this is Agenda 21. This is part of the land grabs taking over, not allowing, you know, and putting us into, a smaller living area on top of one another, and where we're not, you know, creating our own food or cattle or whatever. And it's going to, this is it, right? And I was interested in that. So, and specifically the Second Amendment as well. Obviously, you can look at the mainstream media and see that there is an agenda to disarm the American citizens and again, it's a new world order. We have all kinds of strange shootings going on. We had one happening in San Bernardino, California here that has been defined possibly as being a craft international mercenary hit because it had three tall white guys in tactical gear doing it, et cetera. Okay, so anyways, now you get to the Bundy Ranch situation, the new situation, where they decided to occupy the federal building based on the Hammonds case, another group of ranchers. And in my opinion, and this is my opinion, this is what I feel, and I do feel that it was a bad chess move. You know, they went in, you know, it's not they're defending anybody. They're in the offense and they are in a federal building with guns. And I felt, in my opinion, it was a bad chess move. I understand why they're doing it. I understand the logic, what they're defending. But if they really wanted to get that message out, why not come to us, the media, our media specifically, and talk to the Hammonds, talk to it and become it, make it an awareness in a better way. Instead, it went this way. And I have heard that there is there's question, again, of Pete Santilli, obviously, who was one of the main live streamers out there.
Yep.
He is now in jail still, apparently, and the ACLU's trying to get him out, et cetera. But they are using his evidence. It was his evidence on live stream that actually allowed them to incriminate them and take them in. I think it's interesting that the Bundy family is one of the 13 Illuminati bloodlines. Okay, I just find that to be an interesting connection there. All right, and it's almost like the mainstream media took this for fodder like crazy to basically go along with the agenda of the Second Amendment, etc. It's not helping us in any way, shape, or form. Nobody is able to see what the real issues are but that they're about. Now we have extremists. Domestic terrorism on this country, it falls right into the Patriot Act, and it also falls into the EU global police force being here in the seven strong cities that they're here specifically to fight terrorism, domestic and foreign, on the American soil. So I think just in that sense, it's questionable. There's also questions that maybe Ryan Payne was also PSYOP or COINTELPRO. I've heard that come under wind as well. So I really don't think, and even other people that happen to, you know, they admitted right on my show that and they're kind of being a leader about it, said that he, of course, he believes it's a PSYOP. But he made it sound like it was a PSYOP to incriminate the Bundys and do bad for the Bundys. But I think it's a PSYOP. My feeling is it's a PSYOP to create the social engineering cultural agenda that the media is doing right now about the Second Amendment and the Constitution, and also anybody else that is a dissident or a protester or somebody who is speaking out against the government now can have the label of being questionable. It's my opinion.
Yeah, basically painted with broad brush strokes, this caricature of the Patriot, the freedom movement, the so-called truthers. And it created a charged atmosphere. And I mean, look, you know, and I know, just from 9/11 alone, and I, you know, this is fundamental now. If you don't know this stuff, go back to kindergarten.
Right.
They don't mind collateral damage. They don't mind innocent lives being taken. They don't mind playing their own team right to the point of death in order to walk something out and make it blow up. This is what they do. They play all sides against all sides. There are handlers and controllers on both sides. All of the events are scripted and managed, but there's always elements, little details that slip out. And now we've gotten good enough that we spot these details. But I think what's disturbing to me is, you know, they've painted this caricature. We're not going to take this country back with guns. You
know, no, we're not.
And that's a fool's errand. I admire the people who have formed around militias because I think it's constitutional. I think it's good that people are armed. I think it's good that we are able to defend ourselves. Having said that, the odds against us now, even given that I understand there's potentially 3 million armed militia across the country, the weapons at the disposal of the cabal and their military assets are beyond anything that you're going to match with guns on the ground. So the only way we take this back, this country, which America is the world. I mean, we have an audience in Europe. We have listeners all over the planet. But the example is going to be, can we work through this in a conscious way to expansively undermine the cabal's machinations? And alternative media, at least for now, still has some leverage to be able to reach people with a message that, listen, there's a wave that's coming into the planet. People are waking up. Mm-hmm. Is it large numbers? No. But nothing in history ever changed with large numbers. Once we hit a critical mass of consciousness on this planet, we then have the ability to spark what will be the mass movement, but it'll be evolutionary. Those of us who are working in this media doing what we do in all of our different ways, whether it's stand-up comedy, playing music, doing DJ sets, running a network, all of this contributes to that consciousness. And I know from what you're doing, you're trying to come at this from a conscious manner as well. Tell me a little bit about your sense of where we are in consciousness expansion and heart expansion and what you think we can do to kind of pivot this whole thing now in a way that doesn't require violence and insurrection.
Well, if you really think about it, the most thing that I think is threatening to them or an agenda people trying to control something is our word, is our communication, is art, is, you know, like in a sense, there is a renaissance, if you will, that is sparking. And I think it's coming from this end Unfortunately, there are a lot of artists and people who are creative that think of the machine as being the only barometer of what that's all about, and that's the only way to get your stuff seen. And the ideas behind it, or the communication that you're really trying to get across to people, to open up their hearts, help them understand certain things. And even if you're not totally right about something, but a film will have a certain viewpoint and show a certain aspect of humanity or a cultural cause, even if it's fantasy or not. And there are things that are very heartfelt that can transcend, in the expression of art, et cetera. And real news. Real journalism. We don't have that really anymore. And the ones that try to do it on the other side, end up dead. Or whatever, and even on our side too. Unfortunately, they stop the messenger.
We'll see what happens when journalists get a hold of something. Just look at Michael Hastings, as one example of journalists who get iced because they got too close to the truth about something. So clearly, that's being locked down, and we. We can do what we're doing right now, and what you're doing, and. I can't help but think.
Yeah, I mean, we can.
Go ahead, please. I'm stepping on you. Go ahead, Terry.
My thought is because we. I think my bandwidth got a little. Your picture stopped there. Okay, there, you're back.
Yeah, yeah.
I do think that we have the opportunity. We have the opportunity with the internet, with the fact that I just have this cell phone and I can live stream in HD and talk on it, and or we have Periscope, or we have all these different things going on that we can be the media in the different way. We can do what they are doing, basically, that influences culture on such a large level. Now, I don't mean to be as manipulative as that. It's not you're not wanting to buzz out people's minds and things like that. But if you have real organic music with great lyrics that say something that people hear and inspires them from the inside to look at something differently, or maybe, and it's really about what we think and what we do and where we're at, that we begin to create a different world. And so again, knowledge is power. So that's what I think. I think that more, and to call to the real people to step forward, not the ones that, are doing it so they can go on these, go and sell your books at the Conscious Health Life Expo and have people pay a bunch of money, or sell your herbal products. We all have to find a way to stay afloat in what we're doing, and some products are great, but we have to think about not ourselves anymore, that we are actual real light workers or light warriors or soldiers, and being the real artists and creator beings that we are, and use this opportunity to help people that way to awaken. That's what I think I like being a part of that.
You do, and you do it real well. Yeah. You're very multifaceted. We need creative people, and that really is the spark that I think can set the next cascade of waves off in consciousness. It is already starting.
Yeah.
And all the darkness in the world, darkness doesn't comprehend light. So the more light we become, and the more aware we become, the more we're able to defend and then expel all of this darkness that's all around us. Terry, anything else do you want to talk about or say as we go out tonight?
Anything? Well, I just want to say I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed the show, and thanks for having me on. And you can find me on Facebook, Terry Joyce, T-E-R-E Joyce. My website is www.freedomofjoyce.net. And then when I'm back on Freedom Radio, that's about it. Be well, everybody. Peace and the love.
Yeah, absolutely. And peace and love to you out there in Lizard Land. Take care of yourself, Terry. Stay on the line. We'll talk a minute when we go off.
Okay.
That's going to wrap it up for tonight. Bandwidth throttling and all of the things that went on. We got through the show and we got the message out. It's the end of February. We'll see what March brings. Keep your heads up out there. Be aware of what's going on around you. Keep your sixth sense lit up. And the truth is out there. It's inside you. We'll all find it soon. This is All Planet TV. I'm Randy Bond. Good night.